This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Wing & Tail Boys podcast, your Northeast hunting and fishing destination. I'm Chris.
And I'm Angelo.
And we're your hosts. Join us as we navigate the woods and waters of the Northeast, sharing our passion for the outdoors.
Whether it's land management, outdoor recreation, hunting, or fishing, we're going to cover it all. With 40 plus years of experience in the Northeast, we'll provide insights, tips, and stories to help you make the most of your adventures and help you experience the wild.
So, tune in, grab your gear, and let's hit the woods together. And always remember, success is just a commitment away. Welcome for another week, Wing & Tail Boys podcast. As I record this intro, it is Tuesday, March 25th. Spring is upon us. The weather is getting better and better by the day. Turkey season is around the corner, or maybe even started for some of you guys. For those of you who aren't into turkey hunting, it is timber stand improvement time. We're out there hinge cutting, hack and squirting, double girdling. We're doing the stuff we need to make sure we improve our property for the upcoming season. For those of you who are fortunate enough, this is the time of year where you're starting to prep for your spring planting. Maybe you're frost seeding. Maybe you're trying to figure out what you got to do for the spring or the summer. Either way, we're out there getting work done. And that's the direction that today's episode is going to take us, as we welcome Al Tomeshko of Vitalize Seed Company to join us and talk all things food plotting. Now, if you guys listened to the episode with Mitchell Shirk about a month and a half ago, we talked about kind of the overview of our property, kind of starting no-till, some of the pros and the cons, the difficulties and the struggles that we went through. But that episode really broke down the problems that we were having. To summarize, long story short, at our property, we don't have a long enough growing season. So we don't have the ability to plant a true summer blend, or so we thought. But as we talk through this episode, Al kind of opens my eyes to their seed blend being slightly different and possibly giving me the ability to plant a summer blend in the future. What we're going to talk about on this episode also is the 1-2 punch that Vitalize Seed has. I don't want to give it all away, and Al does a much better job explaining this than I do, but they have their nitro boost that you plant in the summer and your carbon load that you plant in the fall. And together, between the two, there's about 30 different species that you're putting into the ground each year, and they work together beautifully. Again, Al's going to do a much better job of explaining that in this episode, but that's the kind of stuff that you're going to hear about as you listen through this week's episode. They also have a new blend out, the Clover Plus, and also their premium Clover blends. There's actually two Clover blends. Again, Al is going to talk about those in this episode, what their benefits are, and who would maybe benefit from using that either together with their Nitro Boost or in place of their Nitro Boost. So with all that being said, guys, I'm going to shut up and stop talking now. I don't really have too much to update you with. So I'll fill you in next week. Without further ado, enjoy this week's episode. And until next time, remember, success is just a commitment away. Have a great week. Oh, welcome to the show, man. How you doing today?
Good, Chris. It's nice to see you person to person here. I know we've talked on the phone and stuff, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for joining us, man. You know, little background story here. I've kind of let the listeners know over the last week or a few weeks, but we've started this little partnership, sponsorship kind of thing together between the two of us. I'm going to be testing out some seed for you this year, which I'm really, really excited about. One of your newer clover mixes, if I'm not mistaken. And there's a big reason for that. There's a certain problem that I have on my property and that I'm sure a lot of other people, both in my region and across the country, might have the same problem that, and they can relate to it. So hopefully the solution for me works for everybody else. But before we get into that, if we have some listeners here that don't know who you are, been living under a rock, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit and introduce your company and tell us a little bit about what Albert's about and what Vitalize Seed is about.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for the opportunity. So my name's Albert. I am the founder and co-owner with my buddy Jared of the Habitat Podcast of Vitalize Seed. Really, the kind of genesis of Vitalize is pretty remarkable, at least from my perspective. So I was making my own seed mixes for many years. I mean, it all started back to kind of learning about some regenerative agriculture and stuff. And we had been fortunate to add more acreage to the farm and was doing more and more acres. You know, I wasn't doing 2 or 3 acres anymore. I was doing 5 and then 10 and so on, you know, and I was really started to get interested in fertilizer. And then there was just a lot of soil chemistry. And then I started getting interested in soil organic matter and kind of soil biology and doing a lot of my own research. I took a soil test and sent it off to my local co-op, you know, and got the results back. And I remember the fertilizer bill to do like 5 acres, I think it was, just in the spring, was going to be over $2,000. Mm-hmm. And that's when I said, okay, there has to be another way. Like, we're in southeastern Ohio, you know, foothills of Appalachia. I'm looking at the soil. I'm like, okay, it's not light, but it's not overly heavy. But I'm like, there's got to be more here than what these nutrients are saying. And, you know, I relied on a lot of brilliant researchers out there. I read every book going back to the 1930s and 30s that I could find from Dr. William Albrecht talking about calcium and balancing soils, all the way up to some of the more modern day regenerative ag focus. And I've tried to keep a good balance between the two. During that time, I was documenting on places, previously it was the QDMA forums that actually went away, but I had a pretty substantial thread there for years, as well as the Ohio Outdoors. Now, I started that one more recently, but throughout my time, I had been sharing some progress and some things on social media or whatnot. Hey, here's the farm. Here's what we're doing. Here's how we're doing it. Just at that time, spray and broadcast. You know, I didn't have a drill. I had a Whirly Bird or PTO spreader on the back of the tractor, and that's how I was doing it. And what was really cool to see was the interest kind of just naturally grow. So I started having a lot of people go, man, I'd buy a mix off of you. Hey, can I buy that off of you? And at the time, I'm like, you know, I don't know. You know, I got a young family, and was able to contact Jared, you know, and Jared has a fantastic platform, and he and I got to talking about it. And it's like, let's see if we can do this, you know, and we started just about 3 years ago, you know, and we've grown substantially. We just added another new distributor in the Michigan area. I think we have 30 some distributors throughout the country. And then obviously we ship a 2-year door. That's what most people still like to just go online, they buy it, everything on the websites, you know, free shipping to your door. But that's really where it started. I myself, our family property, we manage, it's primarily a timber farm with emphasis on wildlife. So a big thing I focus on is NRCS contracts, EQIP contracts. I cut a lot of timber in those contracts. We've sold a little bit of timber with the plan to make the forest better for hopefully my son and daughter when they inherit the farm someday, and you know, manage it the right way. We manage about 300 acres, and then we lease a little bit for deer hunting. So total management from a whitetail's perspective is about 400 acres, and then we plant between 40 and 50 acres of food plots every year on that piece of property. And we use everything from a no-till drill all the way up to you know, hand tools that we're just broadcasting. And that, of course, at 40 and 50 acres, just to be clear, that's because we're planting twice a year on the drilled acres. And then on top of that, there's, I don't know, maybe 5 or 10 acres of trails and things that we're using, clovers and things, just to help spread out the amount of food that we have on the farm relative to the number of deer. And we've been managing this piece for, gosh, it's getting closer to 20 years than 10. So it's been quite a while that it's been in the family. We've had a lot of fun and some success along the way.
Right. Oh, man, that's an awesome story. I love that. And there's a lot of similarities in there with kind of your property and how you kind of the process of getting into the seed and the no-till and all that stuff. It's very similar to my story. And there's a couple of things in there that I want to touch on. First of all, big shout out to Jared and the Habitat podcast. I've been listening to his podcast for a few years now. Our family, we just got the property. I think this is going to be our 5th hunting season coming up this year with our property. So it's still relatively new. First couple of years, we were afraid to touch anything or like really do anything crazy, you know. But I've listened a lot to his podcast and the different advice and tactics that he offers. And I was really, really pleased with the one he just posted where he talked to the guys who just did the study, I think out of MSU Deer Lab, where they were talking about hinge cutting and whether it's successful or not. And if you guys haven't listened to that one, definitely go and give that a listen. I know Jared's part of the Sportsman's Empire podcast, same as me, you know. So anytime we can share the love and kind of, you know, direct people to different things. I love that. Making your own seed for a couple of years sounds really cool because I've been trying that myself also. And that's kind of where I got started. You know, I've listened to a lot of Dr. Grant Woods. I've listened to a lot of Jeff Sturgis. I've listened to a lot of the stuff you put out. And I kind of just went onto anyone who isn't aware, Green Cover Seed has like a My Mix calculator. And you can go to their website and you can select the different species of plants and seed that you want. And then it'll automatically populate how much of each seed you need to have the proper blend and all that stuff. And I used that for a couple of years and that worked out great. But I ran into the same problem you did, man, where I was like, I'm a teacher. I don't make enough money to be spending thousands upon thousands of dollars a year for fertilizer. There's got to be another way, which is how I ended up getting into no-till, very similar to you. But along the way, I love that you brought up that you went back as far as the 20s and 30s and read whatever literature you could find. What's really cool is back in the 20s and 30s, there really wasn't the granular fertilizer that we have today. You know, that was really a byproduct as far as I'm aware. And my understanding is that like granular fertilizer is a byproduct of the world wars and just having all of these factories and these extra leftover materials and stuff and not really knowing what to do with it. And so spawned granular fertilizers. I share all that to say it's only been in the last 100 years that we've been doing all of this fertilizing and putting all of these additives into the soil. So before 100 years ago, we didn't need all this. The plants did it itself. Or, you know, they had supplemental stuff you know, cow manure, chicken scat and stuff like that, you know. So I'm all for the natural side of things. And the fact that you're trying to build your property so that way your kids have something to inherit and enjoy in the future. My brother and I were in the same position. My brother has 2 little girls. One's going to be 8 in April. The other one's going to be 3 in July. My wife and I are expecting our first in the next month. You know,
congratulations.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you. You know, we've talked about that. And, you know, we have a feeling she might even come a little early, you know, so it's things are kind of looking up. But that's my goal is we got this property in kind of in shambles, I want to say. There was really good deer stock, really good DNA, genetics, whatever you want to call it. Great bucks, but our property specifically, 130 acres, the moment late October hits, I mean, you could see across the whole damn thing. There's really no cover. There's nothing green coming up late season. And the later into the season we get, the more the deer push out. So between the money, not having the cover and not having anything for the deer to eat, we kind of spawned this no-till process out of necessity. And I say all this to kind of just give you a background of where we've come from, like where we started. And we essentially cut down a field that was two different fields that were already there. They were tall standing grass, which in hindsight, we probably shouldn't have done it. That was probably a really nice stand of just natural grasses and native grasses I probably should have left. But we're hopefully going to have a harvest done this year, sometime in November. If I could get the ferns killed before then, that's going to be a task in itself. But when that happens, we're going to go from 1 acre of tillable to about 15 to 20 acres of tillable. I'm really excited for that. We're pretty much doing a forest reset. So they're doing like a 70-75% canopy reduction, getting rid of all the pulp wood, clear cutting wherever we want clear cut. That'll be the food plots and the bedding areas. And then just letting the forest kind of take up where it wants, spreading, I guess, like maybe some elderberry, some greenbriar seed just throughout the property where I want some natural screening and stuff like that. And then we'll kind of take it from there. This whole conversation, hopefully, is for people who are in the same position as me, that have purchased a property or, you know, inherited a property that is not in the greatest shape. They don't have, you know, deep pockets or bottomless pockets to spend all the money they want or to bring someone in to do this stuff. And hopefully we can help people save some money. To dive into what we've done over the last few years, we got in there year one, cut everything down, spread whatever seed we wanted. We basically replicated green covers. I think they have like a cool season blend and then a fall blend. Right? Like a warm season blend and a cool season blend, essentially. We mimicked that. Year one was great. We went in with a mower too late, cut it down, and we screwed ourselves for the rest of the year. The next year, we took our first soil sample, and this is what we came up with. I had a pH of 5.3 in one plot. Another area had a pH of 5.2. Another area had a pH of 5.8. And the last, which is the best, was 6.3. And that was the only area that we actually cleared out. It was an old apple orchard that we clear cut the dead trees and kind of created like a little spot for us to go with. So since then, we have put over the last 2 or 3 years, I've probably put down over 4,000 pounds of lime between pellet and powder. I did both periodically. I think we did like 2,000 pounds 1 year, 2,000 pounds the next year kind of thing. But again, I don't have the money to sit there and spend on all this lime and all this stuff. So I've gone to a liquid lime that I use in the spring every year. And we've had some success. You know, 1 year spring will do well and fall doesn't do well. The next year fall will do well and spring doesn't do well. And I've gotten to a point now where I've kind of identified what is growing on our property, what doesn't grow on our property, what seeds are great, which seeds aren't. But our biggest problem is we don't have a long summer growing season. We just don't. Right now, we still have snow on our fields, you know, half and half, like where the shade is, there's still snow, where the shade isn't. I was there this past weekend and we have 3 inches of mud and then a sheet of ice. We're still frozen completely under the ground. So, you know, that brings up a lot of its own issues. Both, I don't have a summer growing season, so I can't do a warm season, like a summer planting. I have to do a spring and a fall, which is really two cool seasons. And then it also, I have a late green up. So to manage the weeds and stuff, I have to wait pretty much when I would want to plant is when I have to start spraying. So that kind of now gives you a background of where we are on our property, what we've done, and where we're going. So what I love about Vitalize Seed, which I don't think you touched on, is you guys keep it so simple. You don't have 100 products to pick from. You don't have 30 products to pick from. You don't have 20 products to pick from. You have like 4 or 5. You have your Nitro Boost in the summer, which is high nitrogen content. You have your carbon load in the fall, which is high carbon content. And together, they meet the proper carbon to nitrogen balance ratio to help stuff break down a little bit. So would you like to start to talk about that a little bit, like how you came up with the blend, why you came up with it the way you did, instead of saying plant everything every season and call it a day?
Yeah. So, I mean, the whole idea behind, you know, our blends is there's a million really good companies out there. What I wasn't happy with personally was I just couldn't find a mix that I wanted to plant on my farm continuously. There were things that were maybe close, but specifically in the fall, you know, 70, 80, 90% grains, which if you're only concerned about attractiveness for deer, that might be okay. I also like brassicas. The deer hammer them on my piece. I like them from a nutrient sequestration perspective as well. So I was like, well, I don't only want, you know, 0.5% of a brassica in there. I want a good field of brassicas, both forage and things like that. And I wanted specific varieties. So I'll start with the nitro boost. But I mean, that's a lot of legumes, right? And legumes are going to fix atmospheric nitrogen in the root nodules. And then, of course, up in, you know, whether you want to call it the stover or the above ground biomass. But you don't want to only have legumes, because legumes are what they call low carbon and nitrogen, and they're going to break down rapidly. So if you plant to, let's just for talking purposes, say a field of soybeans, and in most cases in deer food plots, and based on your audience, we're going to pretty much focus today on deer food plots and stuff. But we do a lot of work with small gardeners, flower farmers, you know, larger scale gardeners, and even we've done a little bit with some row crop agriculture. But today we're going to primarily focus on food plots. You're not going to have 60 bushel per acre beans in a food plot setting. And the reason is because you got a lot of deer eating those soybeans. So even that, your above ground biomass is going to be typically, right, reduced. And you go ahead and plant your fall mix into that. Well, low carbon to nitrogen ratio plants like a soybean, right, and even clover, they break down very quickly. So the goal is to have some of that when you plant that fall mix. So they break down quickly. Well, where are those nutrients going to go when they get mineralized? Well, they're going to go into that next planting, in our case, the carbon load that's coming up. But you also want to keep that soil covered and follow those six soil health principles as much as possible, right? And that's where you get into things like we added sorghum and Sudan. Some people, why do you have both? Well, the sorghum will produce a grain head that a lot of guys, myself included, I'll drill through it. It'll pop back up oftentimes. Now in late season, I have my carbon load growing up, and now I have a grain head here where the deer can come back and eat it. Well, the Sudan, not overly attractive to deer. Oh, but why would you want that? Exactly why? Because a lot of parts throughout the whitetail's range are overrun with deer. There's too many deer per available food for these deer. So we either need to have to plant more food, cut more trees to make more food, or shoot more deer. In a lot of cases, we have to do all three, right? There's that balance between number of miles and food on the landscape. So with our situation, I want some plants specifically in that summer blend that are not going to be highly attractive to deer, because I don't want everything walking off. The other thing about sorghum Sudan, super good root system that can go crazy deep depending on your soil. So breaking up compaction, but also grabbing those nutrients that are really down deep and pulling that up. Now you're pulling that up into, I had a customer in Louisiana who just actually placed his order again. He's worked with us since we started. He's a great guy, and his order keeps growing because he's been so happy with it. And he sent me pictures of him and his son. I mean, some of the Sudan was like 14 foot tall.
Really?
Yeah. So you're talking insane biomass. Now you lay that over. Now it's a small percentage, so it's not like it's going to be so thick. Again, we're balancing that carbon and nitrogen ratio. So it's not like it's going to be so thick that, oh my gosh, I can't, you know, plant into this. But you get a lot of biomass, and that biomass is going to feed microbes and it's going to feed your next planting. And that's really the whole idea behind our system. Similarly, Mitch and I have talked about this for hours. If you look in agriculture, now again, I don't ever like to talk in absolutes, but just in general, I've been fortunate to work with several different row crop farmers, at least from a consultative discussion perspective, right? Not as many have we done, you know, in-field trials on, but we spoke about ratios and things. And typically, they're planting 30 pounds of rye to the acre, maybe, you know, 15 pounds of rye, and then they'll add like a hairy vetch, something like that, right? And don't quote me on the specifics, but it certainly is not going to be this 200, 300, 400 pounds or whatever some things. And not necessarily saying that's wrong, but from a nutrient cycling perspective, where guys can, I think, they give up on no-till is they plant rye in a monoculture, super heavy. And they go back in and they roll it over and use an herbicide or something. And then they try to plant something else into it. And even if it's a legume, there's so much nutrient tie up in that thatch that your microbes need nitrogen to break that down. And the legume crop isn't going to give you enough to break that down at a rapid rate. So guys get frustrated. What do? They go grab their disc. They disc it all under. Well, now you're putting oxygen into that system. Microbes are going to proliferate and they're going to basically burn that down, just like firewood, right? They're going to consume that thatch, and guys go, well, see, tillage works better. It's not. It was just an imbalance in the system. It's, again, a lot of times, if you talk to farmers who are using like rye or winter wheat as a cover crop, the ratios that they're typically putting down are quite a bit less. I mean, not even half, but even more than that, probably, than what you hear recommended in the Deer Food Plus mix. Now, it's larger acres and stuff, so some of it's not walking off the field. But rye is one of those crops where it can take a lot of browse and still is really thick the next year. So like in our carbon load, I'll be, I always want to stay humble, but I'm very proud of the fact that it's only 55% of our mix is grains, because I don't want, I always tell people, I won't sell something I wouldn't plant on my own farm. And if you feel like, oh, my field got overbrowsed, or you can always go back and touch it up with some oats or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I want to sell something that's only, you know, 50 to 55% grains, you know, and then we have a ton of other good things in there, which I can touch on later. But a good portion of that too, so you got 4.5 pounds of brassicas in that mix of various types, forage and tuber production, that are going to feed your soil and your wildlife, specifically for, you know, when we're focusing on food plots.
And 4.5 pounds of brassicas is a lot of seed. I mean, brassica seed's pretty small, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And that's in our carbon load. And then again, you have, I don't have the math right, but it's a little bit more than that, or close, of your annual clovers too. So we also put in that mix your fixation balanza, your frosty burst seam, your crimson clover, et cetera. So that's all in that mix as well. And I mean, anybody who's listening is interested, again, there's so many great companies and folks in the industry, but they can go to our website and see. I mean, the reviews on that mix are, I mean, they're just through the roof. I mean, people are so happy with it, because it's not only going to feed deer from the time you plant it, it's going to keep feeding deer all winter. It's going to keep feeding deer in the spring, because all of those winter annuals are going to come. Other than a lot of times, brassicas just, they get eight or something like that. But even sometimes, depending on deer densities, they will make it. But all your clovers and stuff, I mean, they're going to come. And there are some guys who are like, I just can't kill it. Like, it's too nice. And I've had a lot of guys who are big turkey hunters. Mm-hmm. They'll leave it an acre or two just to hunt birds over it, because it's so attractive to birds. Going back to our nitro boost, I mean, again, you know, we really have a lot. I'll just run through it quick, but we use a little bit of spring barley, forage peas, soybean. We use Eagle Forage soybeans. Why? I think they're a fantastic company. They have a great quality forage soybean that can handle a lot of browse. And let's face it, like I said, a lot of food plotters are doing small acreage and they need to be able to handle browse. Cowpeas, sun hemp, buckwheat, lab. Again, we have this big structure, right? Lab's not a cheap seed, but I felt it's important to try to maximize tonnage per acre. So I wanted to have some of these climbing type varieties that are going to climb that sorghum and Sudan. You know, really, it'd probably be better for me to leave them out just from a pure profitability perspective. But I wanted to differentiate, because that's what I want on my farm. And it's proving that that's what other folks want as well, right? So we had that lab. The first year we didn't have this, and we actually changed this, and I think it's one of the best decisions we ever made. We went and got American joint vetch. Mm-hmm. So that is a fantastic crop. It's a little bit of a slower grower, but what I will say is it can handle an intense amount of browse. It's a legume, and it just seems like it just keeps wanting to grow. It just wants to keep coming back, and it really fills the gap, I feel like, out of it, that mid-story within the other things that are growing, and does a great job. Mm-hmm. We do add a little bit of sunflowers, and then again, the sorghum. We have a little bit of crimson clover. We have forage rape, and then the Sudan in that mix. I will say that sometimes people have said, oh, can I run that through a drill and a single box? I've been doing, like I mentioned, you know, 20 to 40 acres with these, single box, never had a problem. Obviously, a lot of guys are using the bag spreaders. They're using the, is it the Solo?
The plastic Solo chest mount. Yeah, the chest spreader.
Man is another chest mount brand. I'm trying to think what else. And then, you know, we do have people, I'll say, I know you're big on no-till, but we have guys who love our mixes and they're just conventionally doing things.
Sure.
I mean, they're just going to disc, they're going to fertilize whatever their soil test says. They just like the diversity, and that's okay too. And I just help them where I can as far as, you know, reading a soil test or whatever, if they want that. Mm-hmm. But that's really what is unique, I think, about us, is the varieties and the ratios of our mix. And then, of course, the whole idea of balancing that carbon and nitrogen ratio. And I hope you don't mind, Chris, but let me just take a quick step back. I wanted to hit on something.
Yeah, go ahead.
Carbon and nitrogen ratio, it sounds like, if you're not familiar with it, it's like, oh, what in the world was that? You know, it can kind of be a little bit cumbersome of a topic. And the best way I can simplify it, there's two analogies I like to use. One is if you took a clover plot and you sprayed it with glyphosate, you can visualize what that field would look like in 2 to 3 weeks, right? It would simply be naked. It would be like bare dirt. Well, why? Well, because clover's low carbon to nitrogen ratio. If you did the same thing with a corn field, you wouldn't expect that to be gone, right? You'd come back in 2 or 3 weeks and you go, oh man, there's all these corn stalks laying everywhere. That's because that's a high carbon to nitrogen ratio. And another example I use is like if you're raking leaves in the fall and you're putting them in the corner of your yard, you're looking at this pile and you're saying, whew, that pile of leaves is never going to break down. But all of a sudden your wife says, hey, take the coffee grounds and throw them on that pile. And hey, here's an apple core. And hey, here's a banana peel, right? And you're throwing that onto the pile. And maybe you even mix it in the pile, right, to diversify the distribution within the pile. Your mind almost naturally can say, oh, we're making a compost pile here, right? It's going to break down those leaves. Well, why? Well, because you're stimulating biology through diversification of different carbon to nitrogen ratio plants, or in that case, food waste, right? And that's why all of a sudden all this other biology is getting to go. And now those leaves are going to start getting, and before you know it, you go in there and you're like, I got topsoil, right? I have compost. So that's really, I think, hopefully I didn't lose somebody. They didn't say this is boring, but I think that's the best way to explain and visualize what do they mean? What do people mean by carbon to nitrogen ratios? And how does that impact nutrient availability of subsequent plantings from start of planting? And then we want to stretch that out slowly as kind of that slow release over the growing period for that particular crop, if that makes sense.
If you're anything like me, you love to customize your bow while always making sure everything is just spot on. That's why I trust Anthony and Chris over at Big D Custom Pro Shop. They're located on Route 15 in Lake Pacon, New Jersey, and they have everything you need to tune your bow. And I promise you, you're going to leave there with a smile on your face. So if you live in northern New Jersey, give my boy Big D a shout for all your archery needs. When I head out to the woods, I have to know that I have the best performing equipment that I can afford. So that way, I'm the only variable that I have to worry about. That's why I trust FireKnock products for all my arrow and bow accessory needs. From arrow components to bow accessories like stabilizers and arrow rests, they have what you need. Dorge won't put anything on the market if it doesn't perform 50% better than what's already out there. So head on over to FireKnock.com today to see what they're all about.
Sure. No, I mean, that makes perfect sense. And the way I kind of like analyze that in my head, the analogy I like to use is think of a bodybuilder. If a bodybuilder is only eating protein, well, chances are they're not going to get the results that they want. But if they're having protein, they have some creatine, they're, you know, they have these vitamins and these minerals, well, they're going to see results a lot faster because they all work together. And one of the things I heard early in my food plotting journey was that dirt is soil with no chemistry. Chemistry is dirt soil is dirt with chemistry. So you can't, like, we like to simplify things as much as possible, and we don't want to lose our listeners in the weeds, but at the end of the day, it's important. You don't have to understand the intricacies of carbon and nitrogen, but understanding that the balance is important and why it's important makes a lot of sense. And anyone who's ever been in a field knows that corn stalks are sitting on the ground in May of the next year. But I can't tell you the last time I saw clover, like a dead piece of clover sitting on the ground. I couldn't tell you why it works, but I could tell you what I've observed. You know what I mean? And what's really cool is it sounds like, and this is not a knock on other companies, because other companies do a phenomenal job. I've used other seed and I've found success with them in the past. But other companies sometimes seem to focus on, okay, this blend is meant to restore your soil. And this blend is meant to, you know, cycle nutrients. But your blends seem to do both at the same time, which is why you don't have 10, 13, 15 different products. It's like this one does it all. You know what I mean? And that's what makes it simple for me as a consumer is I don't have to say, okay, do I need this one or that one? I just need that one, you know?
Yeah. So I did a YouTube video on this, and I don't get tons of views, but it's like one of my more popular ones. I said, I'm building soil or fixing soils. I said, there's no magic bullets. And I think sometimes people get frustrated because they want to plant. I'll just use an example of a popular crop, which I love buckwheat. I don't love buckwheat as a monoculture. And there's various reasons. It doesn't have overly high carbon to nitrogen ratio. It doesn't have an overly fibrous root system. A lot of places deer will eat it. Some places no. So you do get good above ground biomass. But I just think that there's better things that you can do but I think it's a great crop to use, like we use it in both of our mixes, actually. Mm-hmm. But what I think ends up happening a lot of times is people say, I want to plant a soil builder. And they'll go in there and plant buckwheat. Or maybe they even do it in a mix. And then they'll go in there and they'll till it under. And there's a really good regenerative, it's called the Regenerative Agriculture Podcast. And his name is John Kempf. He's an Amish fellow from Northeastern Ohio. Yes, he's got, I mean, he's interviewed Dr. Christine Jones, some of the most brilliant soil biologists in the world. But he had a YouTube video on this probably 5 or 6 years ago. And then I heard him actually say it more recently than that. But he basically said, when you till that green manure, if you will, under, you're not building your soil. You're basically feeding that soil right now. Mm-hmm. Where to get longer term stable organic matter or humix built up, it has to be through biology and that slow release. And we could get into mycorrhizal fungi and glomalin production, which helps to create soil stable aggregation, basically allows the soil to be porous. And there's all of these things that go into that. And I'm not telling you how you want to do it on your farm, but just realize that this idea of like, oh, I want to build soil, but then you go in there and disc it all under, it's impossible to do that. If you want to look up redox reactions in chemistry, the idea of adding oxygen, you are simply feeding the microbes that are going to then feed on that material and they're going to consume it. And then once they consume it, depending on the material, they're going to look for additional carbon and nitrogen. And where are they likely going to get that is your existing organic matter.
Right.
And that's how you can actually reduce organic matters in soils. Again, there are times where I've had to recommend tillage, but I think that there's a misunderstanding. And I've almost grown when before I started Vitalize, I had a YouTube channel. It's called Build Better Soil. And I used to love that term, and I've actually grown to somewhat resent it because I think it gets thrown around like use a soil builder. And I still use it. I mean, I catch myself, I try to, but it's like it's a longer process. Now you can make good progress quickly, right? But you might not see it on an organic matter reading on a soil test, but you can see it in the color or texture of your soil, right?
Or the color of your plants that are growing or the vibrance, yes. How vibrant the stuff is that's coming out.
Exactly. So just keep in mind that people sometimes, oh, you guys are a soil building company. What we are is we're a nutrient cycling company. We're trying to focus on subsequent plantings that year after year after year are feeding off of each other and are stimulating biology in your soil profile to make your whole system more efficient. Now, I've been doing this a long time, Chris. We still have setbacks. For example, I planted a lot of food, as I mentioned in the beginning, right? Run a chainsaw a lot. I mean, cut like crazy to get. We still had so much food removed because of the number of deer. So for us, we just have to, again, add more food and we're going to keep shooting a lot more deer. Right. Because we have to get that more level. Right. Yeah. And that's, in my opinion, from somebody who is trying to get their soils better and better and more productive, regardless of the success of a buck on the wall or something, that is a setback because a lot of biomass walked away in the rumen of a deer. And I can't keep them controlled like I could a cow to say, okay, you're going to graze here. You're going to defecate here for a day, and then I'm going to move you here. Like that's very, it's beautiful, right? It's control. But rotational grazing works that way because you're kind of in control. You can't do that. When it walks away in the rumen of a deer and it's a half a mile away in a, acorn thicket, right? Or on an oak ridge, right? You're not, that nutrient is essentially lost from a microbial and soil building perspective.
Sure.
So not to go off on a tangent, but I just want to kind of explain how I look at our business and how I look at us is a little bit more of like, especially if you're doing our one-two system, the nutrient cycling. And like you said, we try to keep it simple. Plant this and then plant this and then plant this and then plant it and just keep going. And I've been doing it for a long time. And maybe sometime I'll share some of the data that I've gathered on that particular information.
Yeah, as a math guy, I'm big on data and statistics and numbers, man. So anytime you want to share that stuff, I'm your guy. The way I always think about it, and the way I've explained it to certain people, is tillage has a place, no-till has a place, and they're both tools in the toolbox to use in food plotting. But this is the way I explain it. The truth is, let's be honest, if you're willing to go out every year, till, drop $1,000 or $2,000 into your food plot as far as lime and fertilizer is concerned, you have a lot more control over the outcome of your food plots. So the way I look at it is if you're willing to do all that and you have the money to spend and do that, you're probably going to have more consistent food plots from year to year. But you're only giving your food plot what it needs for that short 3-month window. Now you got to do it again in the fall. And then when spring comes, it's like every single year you're starting the process over. I don't know about you, Al, but at some point I'm going to get to the age where I'm not going to want to be going out there and doing all this work all the time. Or maybe I want to and my body can't do it anymore. So my thing is, A, yeah, no-till is better for the soil. I feel like we as stewards of the land kind of owe it to leave the earth better than we found it. Because let's be honest, over the last 100 or 200 years, we've destroyed a lot of the earth. Let's face it, you know? But again, doing the no-till sets me up for the future. Like, okay, yeah, I'll give up the first 4 or 5 years to figure it out and get it to work. Because I know once it works, it's going to stay working forever, or as long as I allow it to before I jack it up or whatever the case is. Now, as simple as your system is, it does pose a problem, again, for someone like me, who the system sounds great, but my soil doesn't reach 65 degrees until mid-June. 3 years in a row, we didn't hit 65 degrees until at least June 10th. And our first, if I'm not mistaken, if I'm remembering correctly, our first frost date average is October 1st. So if you go back the 45 to 60 days before the first frost, we're into mid-August is at the beginning of our fall planting window. So if you do quick math, mid-July to mid-August is only 60 days. Just about everything out there has a minimum 90-day maturity rate. So if I wanted to plant a warm season blend, I have to wait until June. They tend to take a little bit longer to grow and sprout. And by the time they take off, I got to kill it to then plant the summer.
Yeah. A couple things I want to jump in on. One, so yep. We recommend 55 degree soil temps.
Okay.
But there's a couple things here. One, it might be a perception shift because we have guys as high as north as Maine who mm-hmm. are planting our 1-2 system. But it might be different than the guy in Alabama.
Right.
Like, right, visually, yeah. how does it look? And one of the things from a food plotting perspective is we have some guys who aren't killing it because the warm season annuals are going to naturally die off anyways, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. They're kind of going to end their life cycle. So we have some guys who will go in and they'll drill through it. And I myself I didn't make this up, but I just kind of naturally said it one day and it's stuck. And I guys have asked me about it before, but I said drill and drive away. So I've jumped off the tractor and got onto a field. I'm, a staggum field's clean. There's not a lot of weed pressure here. Mm-hmm. I drill right through it and drive off. I don't run a roller crimper through it. I don't, we got a whole homemade roller crimper that I got just for to do some trial stuff. I don't bush hog it. I don't spray it with glyphosate or glufosinate, nothing. Like I drill and drive off. We have a couple growers that are in Iowa that plant a bunch of our nitro boost. And then they also do a bunch of soybeans. And I mean, they're broadcasting carbon load in some of these cases, 40, 50 acres of soybeans. Soybeans are still green, but by the time the soybeans kind of start to yellow, and they're getting still fantastic tonnage. Some of that is one option, right? Of just like, well, do we have to terminate it? Or even if we do, though, even if we say we want to terminate, we only got 45 days on it. So the sorghum only got knee high. The question then is, but is that better for your soil than having nothing, right? Did we add some diversity in crops or what?
Well, something growing is always going to be better than nothing growing.
Specifically, I think having that diversity in planting. So like our Nitro Boost has, I'm just going to say 15 and 15, and they're almost all different. There might be one or two things that are the same as far mm-hmm. as species in the mix. So you're talking about like 30 different varieties on an acre in a year. So there's benefit to that from a microbial biology perspective, right? Stimulation mm-hmm. perspective. But if you don't mind, I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the other things that we did. I hit on a little bit earlier, but there are guys who were like, I don't want to plant that and I don't like that idea, or I don't think it's going to work with my equipment or whatever the reason might be, mm-hmm. due to my area and whatnot. So one of the things that we did this year specifically for Chris, he had been thinking about this idea, but
I'm not that special, guys. I'm really not.
I will tell you, I actually just did a video on this. I'm sure you always are great at sharing our stuff, and I so much appreciate that. Just
absolutely,
by the way. But I had just done a couple of videos on it because I have some newer fields that I planted my carbon load into, and I just wanted to kind of bump them along, even though I'm still going to plant this Nitro Boost. And again, carbon load has so many good cool season annuals that are going to come back. And it's going to be the winter rye and the winter wheat and the triticale. We don't put a lot of oats in there because they typically die off, but it just acts as such a good nurse crop that we add a little bit to just help get everything out of the ground. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, all your clovers. I mean, I get pictures every year. Guys are like, this clover's up to my knees. I mean, it can be so thick because we put a lot in there. So what can you do in your situation? Or I'll share my situation too, right? We're quite a ways away. I'm in Southeastern Ohio. Your farm's in New York. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. We're and just to clarify, we are in upstate New York, but where we are in upstate New York is like the elevation is insane. If you drive 20 minutes in any direction, there's corn farmers everywhere. You won't find a single acre of corn anywhere near us. It's just too, I don't know if you saw me looking down. I was trying to find the elevation. I can't find it at this very moment. But I mean, like I said, right now, we have snow on the ground right now. I have friends who are out planting spring food plots already, and they're two towns over. You know what I mean? So like our specific area in itself is cold, but then the elevation adds to it. So just a little background there.
No, and so that's a great piece. So for what we decided to do is, you know, I'm like, okay, what can we add for those guys who want to get, and we're always testing, you know, but what could we add that those guys who were like, man, my field, we had the worst drought in 100 something years in Southeastern Ohio. We were still in a drought, even after having like the snowiest winter. We're still in a drought now.
Yeah, we're pretty bad too.
Just unbelievable. I'm like, you know, guys suffered a drought in their fall food plots. They got something to take, but not a lot. Guys might have had too many deer, right? And I'm kind of checking all the boxes on this, you know, Chris. And or in your situation, guys are like, okay, I want to get something going, but it has to be something I can frost seed. You know, we get a lot of questions. Hey, can I frost seed nitro boost? I'm like, listen, man, I'd love to have your business, but it's going to fail. Mm-hmm. Don't do it. And I get that question probably 2-3 times a week. You know, guys, they're excited to get out there. So this is a great option. Because you can go in there and get our annual clover mix. We don't have any fancy names. I wish I was more creative. Maybe I got to get Jared on that. He's much more creative than I am. But we just call it our annual clover mix. $39.99. That includes your shipping to your door. Mm-hmm. It's several annual clovers, which is nice because you don't have to worry about, like, if you were to put our perennial clover mix down. Well, now you're going to have perennial clover in there. So now you have to decide, what am I going to do with this perennial clover? Your annual clover, you can go in, you can frost seed it. It's going to green up nice. So if you don't have carbon load in there, you can put it in now or in the spring and then plant your carbon load into it. You can terminate with herbicide easily. Mm-hmm. Or if you have carbon load in there and it's relatively clean, your situation is a little unique. As we discussed, you might have to go in this first time with herbicide. But if you have carbon load in there, like I did on this one particular field that had been red pine for about 35 to 50 years. Mm-hmm. We sold the red pine, cleared this one field, left the back for oak regen. So the front 3 acres, we created a food plot. And that particular field is just, it needs work. I mean, it's just going to take some time because it was 35 to 40, 50 year old red pines.
Right.
And the deer hammered it. So I went in there and you can see the drill rows. And I just walked this way. And then this way, right? Across and then long ways. And I just put in that annual clover because I knew we were going to have a little bit of rain coming. And it was like 81 degrees that day in Southeastern Ohio already. And then it was like today, it might give some snow flurries. So that ground's going to freeze thaw.
Yep.
And it's going to pull that annual clover right in between those rows where it was drilled. And it's just going to help add biomass and then stimulate that microbial biomass below ground. Mm-hmm. So then when I go in to plant my nitro boost, it's just going to give me that cleaner slate with more biomass to start laying over and slowly breaking down with the rye and triticale and stuff that's coming up and just feeding the deer, the turkeys, and of course, the soil, which is a big goal for us at Vitalize.
So let me ask you this then. It sounds like what you're saying is I could plant annual clover now, frost seed if I really wanted to, or wait a month or two, you know, whatever. And then it sounds like I could, if I wanted to, throw nitro boost in the ground on top of that when it hits 55. And see if it takes or not. Is that something I could do if I wanted to?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's what I plan to do. Okay. I plan to give my clover, again, it's not that expensive of you know, a mix. You're talking about $40 to your door, right? So to me, I don't know what a bag of fertilizer is anymore, but it's probably $25. You know,
too much.
So to me,
too much.
It's like I can put this down. I'm going to at least get plants growing. And then, of course, yes, I do plant. So I always plant my nitro boost. I've played around with early planting, and Mitch and I had a kind of a one-off on this. Is it worth it? Because there's a big discussion. I don't know as much in Southeast Pennsylvania, but certainly in other parts of like the upper Midwest, early planting versus not. And now there's enough data, I think, in like Wisconsin stuff with soybeans, like a lot of farmers are pushing for earlier plant. How early can we get soybeans in the ground? Like the data is just showing. Now, there's always this risk of frost, but nonetheless, they're pushing for that. I tried to plant a little bit early 1 year, and it was fine. I didn't see the benefit. So I call it, Chris, I call letting your cover crop or letting your carbon load work for you. Mm-hmm. So instead of me going in and drilling Nitro Boost or broadcasting, I use the term drilling, but anybody, I mean, just broadcast the same idea, right? When my carbon load is 6 inches, if I give it 2 more weeks, I'll have 2 to 3x the growth on that. Right. So now it's chest high or more, right? Probably more than 2 to 3x. Now it's maybe chest high or shoulder high. So I have all this additional biomass above ground. And now I can lay it over, get a little bit better weed mat, sure, a little bit better protection. And I haven't seen, even though I'm giving up, let's say 10 days, 15 days of growing, it seems to catch up at equal rates to when I've planted early. Now, I don't have a huge sample size. It's not like I've done this for 40 years and back and forth. But when I have done it, I've seen the best results around mid-May. So I plant my Nitro Boost every year, May 10th to May 15th, depending on my schedule.
Okay.
And then I plant my carbon load August 15th to 16th every year.
So you're right in the same window as me for the fall planting. See, I wish I could remember who it was. I listened to a podcast like 2 years ago, and they did something very similar where one, you know, side by side, two, you know, same exact field, side by side, same size sections in that field. They planted one early. They waited a little bit longer to plant the other. I think they sprayed one and they didn't spray the other. Like one was frost seed and the other one was spray and plant a little bit later. And the same results, one caught up to the other. You know, so it was like, is it really worth the risk if there's really not a lot in the back end? Now, I do want to kind of point out, because now, like in real time right now, as we're having this conversation, I think I might want to change up the plan that you and I kind of came up with, but I want to run it past you and see. But one thing I want to point out is you said with the exception of like 2 or 3 varieties that may be the same between nitro and carbon, we pretty much have 30 different varieties in your seed. Now, what I love about this and what some people may not see as valuable, but I do, is you already said what looks great down in Alabama may not look great for somebody else up in Maine. But the beautiful thing is there's something in there that will grow for everyone. With 30 varieties, there's no way that you're not, with 30 varieties, there's no way you're not going to find something that grows everywhere. You know what I mean?
It's all about the balance, Chris. I mean, I have fields that are 200 yards apart. Well, and I mean, I'm using the same tractor, same drill, same calibration. The only difference is maybe an hour between plantings. And I'll have some varieties that will be more prolific in one field versus the other.
Sure.
And that's simply just based on nutrient profile, you know, during that time. They all look great, but they might have slightly different where some will do better than others. And I think that's just, it kind of is like an insurance policy, right? It kind of covers you versus planting all one thing
in a monoculture setting. Yeah. So what, to kind of give the listeners kind of like a basis of what you and I talked about, you know, we've actually, I don't know if you remember, but I called you almost 2 years ago and talked to you about one of these soil samples that I had and an issue that I was running into. And I think we had the same conversation about how I really didn't have anything to plant in the summer. So I called you, I don't know, it was like 3 months ago now, told you about my issue. We kind of, you know, agreed to work together and, you know, run that clover seed for you, that annual clover blend. My problem is we talked about this a little bit off the air before this episode, but I put my own mixture together and the grasses took well in the fall and the summer and the other stuff did not. So we're in a situation now where I have, what's it called? I have a lot of grasses growing up and I don't have the space for everything else. So I asked you, do I frost seed and just let stuff grow that grows and then kill it and really take over in the fall? Or do I wait for the stuff to grow, kill it, and then plant my spring plot to, plant my spring plot, the clover, and then take it from there and kind of like start with a fresh palette? We agreed. Best thing to do would probably be let it grow up, kill it, and then go. I already told you I have literally three inches of mud and then ice. We cannot bring our side-by-side onto our fields until June, July. I'm not kidding. So whether I had a crimper or a drill or not, I have to be out there with hand tools and a hand spreader because I physically cannot get the machine where I need it to go. So the plan all along again has been let it grow, kill it, plant the clover, let that grow, and either kill it in the late summer or just leave it and plant the carbon load into it. But now I'm wondering if it makes more sense first off, I didn't know that 55 degrees was that temperature you want to go for. I didn't know all the other seeds I've used is 60 or 65. So that 55 actually probably buys me 2 extra weeks of planting, which is really nice. Would it thinking back now to this conversation, it sounds like it wouldn't be a bad idea to frost seed the clover and then try the nitro boost in the summer and kind of see what happens. Don't kill it because we know it's not going to grow long enough to hit maturity. Don't kill it and just plant the carbon into it and just run it straight through from spring to fall and see what happens. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think it could be a great option. I think the biggest success for guys who are doing kind of a throw and spray or throw and mow, you know, whatever you want to call it in broadcast, and I do a good bit of this, but the biggest thing is having those seeds in the nitro boost, because some of them are larger, your sorghum, your soybeans, your cowpeas, sunflowers, you want to make sure they're covered, because if they sit on top, you're just feeding birds. Right. So that is the biggest tip I would give, is once you get carbon load established, you'll have that structure to then either lay it over, or when you spray it, it will naturally fall and cover those seeds. So it's protected from predation. But if you just go and sling it out there, that could be one potential. Well, you're not going to have that as much with clover because it's just so small, right? But just something to keep in mind for this first year, once we get you going and we get the clover and we get a carbon load in, and then going into the next year, we have some of that really nice structure. I think it could be a really good thing. Now, we could try it this year, but I just think that would be my only concern kind of off the bat, if you will, you know, about predation and things like that.
So someone who's in the same situation as me tried to plant something last year. Stuff took. It's growing. It's just not quite what we want. Maybe there's more grasses because I'm very grass heavy. We have clover and grass. That's pretty much all we have. The brassicas didn't take well at all. So someone who's in my situation, you're saying it makes more sense to bite the bullet, don't frost seed, wait a little bit longer, kill off whatever's there, whatever does come back, kill it, and try to start fresh in the spring. If it works, great. You're now 3 months ahead. If it doesn't work, you're going to do what you would have done anyway, kill off at the end of the warm season and have a clean brown food plot, soil, whatever you want to call it, to carbon load into, and then let the fall be the beginning of the cycle. Am I hearing that correct?
100%. And really the goal there is to not let your rye, in the case where you have like a rye grass or a fescue, is to get to seed head, because we're trying to reduce it. So even if you have to go in and kill your annual clover mix off that you put in before planting carbon load, you're still going to be ahead because you didn't have all that grass seed go to head. And now you're trying to really kill even more. So hopefully you'll be in a situation where you've really limited the amount of competition.
Okay. Now my next question for you, and I want to be conscious of your time. I know, you know, we're getting towards the end here.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. So right now, some of my stuff is green, like some grass is green. Just, you know, now that the snow is gone, some of the grass coming up is green. Some of the grass isn't yet. Some of the stuff hasn't started sprouting yet. Would it make sense to do a double spray where I try to spray and kill what's green now and then go back again in, say, a month and spray again? Would you recommend that? Or would you recommend just waiting for everything to grow, cut it once, and then spray it once and call it a day? Like, how would you go about
that? I'm sure that's highly debated. I think glyphosate, they tend to recommend 60 degree air temperatures. But I will say that there are people, when you're doing like invasive treatments, bush honeysuckle, that's one of the first things to grow up. And guys will be spraying either glyphosate or triclosphere, which maybe triclosphere, I don't remember off the top of my head. Maybe it's lower air temperature. Mm-hmm. So that would only be my biggest thing is make sure you read the label of the herbicide that you're using, because you don't want to go out there and spray and then go, gosh, it's not going to work at all. But if you think you can get it to work and you have the time and you're like, hey, I'm here, let me throw a backpack spray on and knock out some of this, then yeah, I don't think it would be terrible, because you're going to reduce, again, the likelihood of some of those to go to seed head, which eventually is going to be a good positive for you from the seed bank perspective.
Right. Because I think what ended up happening, like I told you, we killed off some natural native grasses and stuff that were there. And to be honest with you, I don't think we ever got a clean, true kill. I think we're still dealing with some of that returning roots. Maybe the roots were still alive in the soil and just those plants coming back. Because when I say we had a lot of grasses, like, yeah, there was some rye and triticale growing and stuff like that. But there was also like lawn grass. Like it just looked like lawn grass growing that, you know, when it gets too tall, it falls over, but it's only like 7 inches or so. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a lot of that too. We haven't planted that. So either that's, you know, from the seed bank down in the soil, or it's stuff that we never actually fully got control of. You know, and now in our fourth year of food plotting, this is where my debate is. It's, I think now, before we do the clear cuts and really dive into all these other food plots, I think it's really important to gain control of the soil now and say, you know what, let's just take this year to kill all the weeds, make sure everything is gone that we don't want, So that way next year, we're really set to get going and be able to, you know, to have a flourishing food plot. That's pretty much where I'm at.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You might hear my son in the background. I apologize.
Yeah, it's all good. I think he really wants you, man.
Yeah, he's excited that he knows dad's going to be coming out of his office here pretty soon.
That's great.
I think that's the biggest thing. And controlling weeds, you know, again, herbicide use is a very polarizing topic. I believe that I had done a video on this one time. I was in the tractor finishing up a long day. My face is all covered in dirt, you know, and stuff. My buddy had planted most of the day, and I was planting this new part of the farm, and it had been like a fescue pasture. And I kind of jokingly said in the video, I go, listen, however you feel about herbicides and stuff, that's up to you and how you want to handle it on your own property. I said, but for me, you're not going to roller crimp your way out of a fescue pasture. So you're either going to have to use tillage or you're going to have to fight it. You know, if you can bring cows in or something, that's great. Most people don't have access to do that all the time. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's like, I would rather just get in there and be efficient with it and kill it off and maybe plant a little bit of a heavier rate of the seed mix that I'm planting. You know, in my case, it's going to be my nitro booster, my carbon load, and try to overwhelm that seed bank with the things that I want in there and then get my system going to where maybe then I can reduce herbicide use, which I've done on my place. I've had many years where a field will only get maybe one herbicide treatment and then it won't for two planting cycles.
Yeah.
And I've had other years where, you know, it was a drought year or whatever, deer density, and we go back and go, yeah, we got to burn some fields down. So I use it as a tool in the toolbox. And I think a lot of people do as well. But I think that if you're okay with using it, be safe. Don't get exposed to it. Follow good chemical PPE. Read the label. But if you're comfortable doing all those things, use it as a tool in the toolbox because it can certainly help get a lot of those things that you're mentioning, Chris, under control.
Yeah. I mean, and we've all heard the old saying, too much of a good thing is a bad thing, right?
Yeah.
But a little bit of a bad thing can be a good thing. Also, it works in reverse, right? So there's going to be times where the only way to solve a problem is to legit till, to get, what's the one that goes really deep, either a plow or a...
Or like a ripper or something like
that? Yeah, there's times where you're going to need to do that. There's times where you're going to have to disc. When I disc on my property, I like to turn them straight, so I'm not really turning the soil over, but I'm getting some air to it. I'm opening up some channels for the seed to go into. Other times, you need the herbicide. You got to go through. Just make sure... My biggest advice to people, and I'm by no means a professional, is whatever you're going to do, do just enough to get the job done. Don't think that because the label says use 2 ounces per gallon of water, don't think using 6 ounces is going to get the job done better. If anything, you're gonna allow those plants to become what's the word I'm thinking of? You know,
glyphosate resistant.
Exactly. If you use too much, like if it says use 2 to 4, start at 2. Because if 2 doesn't work, you could always go to 3 or 4. But if you start at 4 and 4 doesn't work, you're screwed at that point. You know, so to close it off, there's a lot of things that you can do. Different processes work for different people. Different blends are going to work for different people. And my thing and my advice to everyone is have an end goal in mind, right? We all want to get to the same end goal, have good stuff growing and good management and great deer coming in. But the route to get there is going to be different for everyone. And, you know, just because you use a crimper doesn't mean everybody needs to use a crimper. And just because you use a drill doesn't mean everybody needs to use a drill. But as long as you can get the soil to the ground and get it protected, you're accomplishing the same thing in a different way. So that's what I would like to end it with. Is there anything that you would like to touch on or add to the conversation quickly before we close that maybe we didn't get to add?
You know, I would just say the last things that I will add is, whether you're planting our mixes or not, is use an exclusion fence, number one. That is so critical. And I can't tell you, I've been using them for years and I still learn every year. Like this past year, for example, just real quick example, terrible drought. I had a field, I had tons of pictures of deer in it, but like I would have thought, oh man, they're just eating stuff as soon as it comes up. But how is anything even growing? We've barely had any rain in 60 days. We had like a tenth of an inch of rain. Like when I got to where my exclusion fence is, there was like an 8-inch difference, which talk about a testament to no-till, right?
Right.
How did I retain enough to get that much growth? Now, the bad thing is I have messed up in the fact of, you know, not me solely, but I'll take responsibility. You know, deer densities, I think, have gotten a little bit too high, and we just have to try to correct that. So exclusion fence. I had a friend of mine, he doesn't use our mix, but I've helped him out a lot, and he's in Alabama, and he had never put one up. He goes, man, I've been watching your stuff because I finally put one of these up and I just thought I was a terrible whitetail farmer. He goes, but look at this. And it was like 12 or 14 inch difference in what he had planted in and outside. He goes, I mean, I got pictures of deer, but I didn't get that many. I never would have thought, right? Mm-hmm. So that's number one. Number two, please, 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 if you're going to get into soil testing and you want consistency and you're going to compare year to year, follow good soil testing practices. I have a lot of videos on this on YouTube, but get a soil probe, mark the probe, take it 6-inch depth. I mark my fields with GPS on Onyx. So I'm taking the same location within that field every year.
That's cool.
So I'll take three or four probes within this spot. And then let's say an acre field, I might have 4 Onyx GPS coordinates. And then the only way I'm ever going to sample outside of that is if there's an anomaly within that field of why is this area over here struggling or why is it doing so well? Well, then I'll isolate that out. But if you're just randomly, haphazardly walking through a field, your results are going to be all over the place. So that's really the best way. Same time of year, same depth, using a soil probe so that you're getting the same amount of each layer of soil. If you stick a shovel in and it wiggles, and now you get all this topsoil and you put that in your bag, right? And then the next shovel full, you only take the bottom, right? It's just, it's inconsistent. When you start to speak it out loud, you go, yeah, how could that be consistent? Yeah. And the last thing I'll say, we partnered with Ward Labs. There's a lot of great labs out there. But please, if you're interested in soils, consider getting a lab that's going to give you pH, organic matter, micros, macros, and your base saturations. Then you can really look at, and we can have another talk sometime, Chris, I'd be mm-hmm. more than happy to do it. But then you can start looking at base saturation percentages, which is basically your chemical structure of the soil, and how we can then build that out and how biology can move through the soil, because those are imbalanced, your pH is imbalanced. And then we can figure out how to unlock more of that geology in the soil by increasing biology, right? Yeah. So those are some things I want to highlight. And hopefully, at least one of your listeners took a minute or two of this conversation. I just want to say thank you again for having me.
Of course, man. And those Ward Lab tests and the type of test that they do where you get all of that extra data, that information, I mean, that stuff is so invaluable. It's absolutely incredible. I'll be honest with you though. I don't, like I told you, I don't have the funds to put the stuff in the soil anyway. So I kind of stopped taking soil tests a couple years ago. It's probably bad on my part, but we could have a conversation for 2 hours on just soil samples alone and why they're so important and what you could do with them. I want to thank you again for joining us, man. This was a fantastic conversation. We actually got in depth on some things that I wasn't exactly planning on getting into, which I really enjoy. I would love to have you back again to continue this conversation. I find sometimes I go back and listen to a podcast. I'm like, well, I should have asked that question. But now that makes me think about this, you know, so something to build on and kind of go as we're going through, you know, from now into the summer and into the fall. You know, so again, I just want to thank you for your support. I want to thank you for joining up with us and working with us here, joining us today. And again, hopefully we can meet again soon. So good luck to you.
Sounds great, Chris. Enjoy your afternoon. Thank you so much,
buddy. Absolutely. And I want to thank everybody for listening today. And until next time, remember, success is just a commitment away. Have a great day.
Take care. Thanks so much.
Absolutely.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.